Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm talking to Christine Lannan-Smith and Sudha Butcher, co-artistic directors and founders of Tamasha Theatre Company. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Christine
Thank
and Sudha.
Thank you very much. Hi, thanks.
Hi. Your company's just marked its 21st anniversary with a new production, The House of Bilquis Bibi. It's opened at the Hampstead Theatre before going off on a national tour. The House of Bilquis Bibi is an adaptation of The House of Bernarda Alba. For your 21st year, why did you decide to turn to a classic?
Well, I think it wasn't so much that we self-consciously said, oh, we'll adapt a classic for our 21st year. It was, you know, projects come that with a sort of serendipity, really. I mean, I go to Pakistan quite a lot, and it was sort of, you know, some of the situation that the women find themselves there, which I observed, that made me think of the Lorca play. And that's, you know, it takes 2 years from the fruition of an idea, from an idea to its fruition. And it was just something I felt it was a really good marriage because the play allowed me to use a classic as a window into a contemporary story that brings up issues that are relevant today, which for me was very much that whole, the relationship of Pakistan with America. And like Lorca, who says he's not a propagandist but a poet, I've sort of thought, for me, it was about the kind of small lives with the global ties that exist in Pakistan today, where people look to America as a place to escape to and to be free, and yet also as a place that is oppressing them, you know, the whole kind of front line of the war against terror, etc. And the sort of lives of these girls who wait for their fates to be decided by the men in the family who are often abroad.
Christine, Sudha just said that the show grew organically through her observations of her visits to Pakistan. You've just opened the play at Hampstead. One of the things in terms of the production is that people have criticised a key aspect of the heavily accented use of language within the show. You, as the director, working with Sudha as your partner in the company and also as the writer, what kind of production choices did you make in order to be able to present, I suppose one could say, a contemporary interpretation of a classic Spanish play?
Yes, I mean, one doesn't want to get into too much detail around, you know, what critics might have said around the heavy use of accents. I mean, in my opinion, well, first of all, I don't think there is a heavy use of accents, but I think in terms of production choices, I mean, I think, you know, my very particular aesthetic, coupled with Sudha's aesthetic, is to really draw people in to a world which is believable, true, has a naturalism, has a truth to it. I'm very interested in a sort of theatrical context of drawing people to a work rather than pushing work out to people so that it feels sort of coarse and perhaps heavy-handed. So I think this is a very delicate piece of work. To try and create the landscape and a cultural context that is believable, of course we used accents. It's set in the Punjab. What else would we do? Of course we have used Punjabi, we've used Urdu. Of course we've used those accents to give it that flavour. But the accent, you know, the use of Punjabi and Urdu has really been in greetings and perhaps expletives. You might go and see Warhorse, you might go and see History Boys, and you might see a whole scene in French or German, and no complaint is raised. Tim Supple might come here and do Midsummer Night's Dream with 8 different Indian languages, no surtitles, nobody understands a word, and no complaint is raised. So, I mean, I'm very interested in raising the conversation around this. Why, when a British Asian company chooses to use Indian accents for a play that is set in a subcontinent environment, why is there some sort of response from the critics that this is incomprehensible, as Carol Woda said in one of her interviews? And I'm very confused around this. I think the thing is, I think, you know, Tamasha was set up and still today is looking at the nuance and the complexity of culture and particularly in a sort of ever-changing global climate with its challenges, we're looking at nuance and complexity. And I think this is rarely seen on the British stage. And I think when you try and present something that has this nuance, that has this complexity, but you're doing it in a theatre space which is historically owned, I think, by someone else, it's challenging, and it can cause anxiety, and there is I think an inherent tension in that, and that is why I feel some of the critics, not all of them, have reacted in some way to some of the production choices we have made.
Well, I think we find that time and again, and I think often, as Christine says, it often is when we do Western classics, when there is a sort of real disparity of dialogue, because alongside the great, the criticisms, there have also been some great reviews. And, you know, there is a kind of, you know, a cultural apartheid, which we are actually trying to break down in time, trying to get the same, a great culturally diverse audience enjoying and having a shared experience. And our work works on many levels. So, of course, the Asian audience will get every tiny nuance. You know, I experiment with language in the script. So within the English, I might use things like stingy fly sucker, which, you know, the Asian audiences know where it's come from.
It's a literal translation of something.
It's come from Kanjus Makichus, you know, which they'll just go, oh, wow, that's great. So they laugh.
Or there's the other one about the cat who ate a thousand mice and goes to punch.
I mean, there are millions and millions of those references in the script. You know, there's the cat who gobbled 900 mice and then decides to go to the Hajj. And then there is, you know, sweet tangles of an old woman. You know, our word for candy floss is the tangles of an old woman's hair. And I have poetically made that the sweet tangles of an old woman. So, but actually, as a non-Asian audience, I would hope you would just listen to that language and find the rhythm interesting. Or, you know, I very much intend in my writing to be inclusive. And I think we do very much intend in our productions to have a shared experience. And I am used to, constantly, I am almost always in the minority when I go to the theatre.
I suppose there are two problems here. I mean, Tamasha has always been sort of committed to authenticity and research. I know it's one of the kind of mainstays of how you do your work, so that you're trying to bring out every little inflection of the different type of Asian people that you portray on stage. But then if you see another production that's done by a Westerner, it may be clearer, a bit more audible, but it's just like a generic Asian character.
I think we're committed to the authentic, but, you know, not the authentic in a way that it's a static, as if you've taken a snapshot for the museum, you know. I mean, clearly the authentic in this would be they're speaking Urdu, they're speaking Punjabi. No, I mean, I've made it into English. So I'm innovating. I'm not just taking a snapshot of something as a sociological record, you know. This is a theatre piece. It's something that is off my imagination. You know, I mean, people are used to seeing Lorca, let's face it, as if it's a Spanish classic with white middle-class accents. You know, the Glenda Jackson, it's not a sort of Spanish feel. You know, I have seen lots of Lorca in this country, which has been widely, really well reviewed. And inevitably, people just accept, oh, it's set in Spain. But there's nothing Spanish about the productions or indeed the delivery or anything. It's as if you just accept that it's a Spanish classic. Well, what we've done is...
I think the thing is, what Sudden has very cleverly here done is, you know, she has made a very new and a very fresh script, which, of course, it's come from the original. But actually, when you're watching it, in fact, somebody said this to me the other day, only occasionally is the original evoked as you're watching it, because it has such a fresh and new personality of its own. And I think if you come with a mindset to look at this and say, is this Lorca, you are sort of denying and not allowing the possibility of something new and fresh to emerge. And I think, you know, for me, this is a seamless adaptation. I think the way it sits in a modern-day Pakistani context is, I mean, the synergy is absolutely tangible.
I suppose some of the points, you know, people might comment on is the fact that the girls live in a very modern landscape, i.e. there are sort of modern accoutrements like Facebook, Skype, etc. Yet at the same time, you're imposing the restrictions of the original Alba on them, i.e. that they cannot escape. You know, maybe people find that kind of...
Well, I haven't done that because actually they go out to work. You know, the original Bernarda Alba, they say they're going to have 7 years of mourning. I mean, my production does not do that. You know, it completely shows that two of the girls go out to work. One is a teacher, one is a designer. You know, in fact, Bernarda Alba is Bilkis Bibi in my situation, is sort of dependent on them economically. So, you know, obviously I brought it up to date. But it's interesting, one of the comments, and it came from, funnily enough, it's a GP that we invited to the, you know, play. And he sort of says it's a great clash of cultures. And you expect, you know, someone who's English, middle class, to sort of say it's a clash of East and West. But no, he actually meant it's a clash of the old and the new. And that's exactly what I feel when I go to India or Pakistan, you know, and certainly in some of those slightly smaller towns, which I've tried to show in the play. You know, every servant is still there with their jharu, you know, the broom, with a,
they squatting on their haunches
and yet wandering around mobile phones, you know. So I sort of try to show that incongruity of all the big sort of brands are there, you know, your McDonald's and your Starbucks and La Senza. You know, there's a scene where one of the girls has ordered underwear from La Senza, you know. And yet also there's that sort of archaic, almost Quranic, biblical culture that's...
So you've, instead of Catholicism, you've transposed it into sort of Islam, and the different types of Islamic thought permeating through the different characters.
Well, there's it's interesting that, you know, funnily enough, one of the books that I've just read, and it's because this lady Zaiba Malik is coming on our panel to speak, is I am a Muslim, please, you know, and she's writing her memoir about growing up in Bradford, and you know the whole thing that she is juggling is how different she feels in this grammar school as the only Pakistani origin girl, and how thoughts of religion just dominate her life. You know, heaven and hell, heaven and hell. And it's so interesting because it's the incongruity of her listening to all the kind of Western music, etc., going to a nightclub, going to La Hacienda in, you know, Manchester. And she's all the time thinking about the angels on the left and on the right of her shoulder. And I think the lives are all kind of... Our lives are all, you know, a mixture of all that. And I think...
And I think what's so interesting in the adaptation, you know, I mean, I think Sudha's reflected that so very, very cleverly. So if you... This sort of heaven and hell and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, in the character of Mariam, she keeps saying, you know, because of my sort of religious teachings all my life, I've been brought up to fear men. And she's the character that is ordering... underwear from La Senza and sitting in her underwear on Skype talking to her cousin Papu. Now, that's quite incongruous, but there's such a truth in that. I think some people look at that and think, can that be true? Is that true? And they don't come, or they don't bring themselves to the nuance and the complexity that actually Sudha is saying, well, I've seen this. I've actually seen this, and I want to put this in front of you. So I am giving you a window, perhaps, onto something that you might not have seen before.
But I suppose, as a director, your production artistic choices, you haven't made it easy for the audience who are watching the show, because you have these scenes where characters sit with their back towards you, or somebody talks from a window into the sitting room and all that. This is the servant master thing, you know?
We are in 2010, and I think, you know, if you can't do a scene where somebody has their back to the window, you're looking back to 1950s theatre where everybody just stands on stage in a straight line.
Maybe.
And is, you know, it's all rather declamatory. I mean, if you look at Stephen Daldry in that beautiful production of his, Inspector Calls, I mean, the first scene of that was his whole company in a house behind windows for about 25 minutes in a scene, and he made his name with that. We have about, I don't know, 2.5, 3 minutes where people are behind a grill. Now, I haven't been eccentric, as Michael Billington puts. I haven't been perverse in doing that. What I feel has worked so beautifully is that I feel that with those choices and that set, that beautiful mise-en-scène that Soumaise has done, I feel we have created this fabulous three-dimensional house which has corridors, which has nooks and crannies, and there are conversations here, there are conversations there, and it's not flat. It's got vistas and dimensions to it. And so I feel that on that stage in Hampstead, those choices have helped you feel that there is a real life of a house. And in fact, somebody said to me the other day, my gosh, I found that extraordinary. People get up. He said it's like real life. They just get up and then they go to bed. They get up, they take a glass of water. He said, I believed that was daily life in a house. And I think this thing, whether it's behind a grill or not, is part of that. Those choices all add up and make that world.
I suppose also one of the other more natural things would be that this production has a cast. It's an all-female cast. It has a cast of 9 people who are a mixture of new and experienced people.
Yeah.
The lead, the Bilkis Bibi, is a very well-known singer from India called Ila Arun, and also an actress. I don't know how you, as a director, find working with these kind of different range of experiences. Maybe that's part of the reason why people think it's very heavily accented, because you've got to, like, on the one hand, you're teaching new people from, like, zero craft, and on the other hand, you're working with very experienced people.
Well, we don't have new people from zero craft. I mean, you know, House of Bernarda Alba requires that. I mean, you have people who are young. You have the youngest daughter, and then you have the next youngest daughter, and so it goes on. So in any production of Bernarda Alba, of course, you are getting somebody who's had a huge range of experience, if you're going to cast it appropriately, and you're going to get a very young newcomer with 2 or 3 years' experience, which is enough, to play a role. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't properly read any of the comments or in the reviews. I've skimmed them. But I don't know whether there is an inference that there is maybe a little lack of inexperience. Certainly in my journey in the rehearsal room, I found that the... You know, the baseline of talent was absolutely in place. And, you know, maybe, yet certainly there is... I mean, how often do these actresses, yes, get a chance to play in a classic text, a Lorca, a Chekhov, a Shakespeare? Not very often. But, you know, it doesn't take long to bring somebody to come to that world and to what is required of them to play in something that came from a classic text.
I mean, I think what's really fascinating, and it just shows you the bridges that still need to be made, you know, 21 years later, the urgency of what we're trying to do is as relevant. You know, Ila Arun, interestingly enough, is a, you know, veteran actress of the theatre, of film. She's a playback singer. She's just wonderfully talented in the rural... folk songs of Rajasthan. This is her first role in English, you know, so that's a huge thing for her.
This is your Bernarda Alba,
This is our Bilkis Bibi. But she was saying, and, you know, she's very wise like that, that what companies like Tamasha are doing are bridging for us those global connections between the Indians over there, if you like, and the diaspora, you know, the British Asians. So we're setting something in Pakistan, and she was saying, oh, isn't it amazing? I am acting on stage with, you know, a Glaswegian girl, a Gujarati origin girls. You know, I mean, there are girls from all walks of life, British, Asian, but there's nothing generic about that, you know. We're all coming with a very particular thing. And she says how important it is that we are doing these stories that are bridging, you know, what's happening over there and what's happening over here.
And of course, people may not have realised that on the press night, or the critics may not have known that actually she was performing in English, and that's been huge learning curve for her as an out performer.
No, but also the thing is, look, you don't you come to performance, you don't need that background, and neither do you. You know, you're not judging on that at all. I mean, she's a phenomenal performer. She is phenomenal. You know, the mix of those performances on the stage, as far as I'm concerned, are delicate, are nuanced, are complex, and they're not flat. And, you know, whatever criticism is given around that, I feel to some extent it's a little it really sits with people perhaps who are not embracing the the cultural complexity of the work. And indeed, you know, you ask the question, I mean, who is British theatre for? I mean, and I think it's a very pertinent question, particularly now in the time of, you know, impending cuts. I mean, what companies are making work for cross-generational audiences that truly reflect the diverse population of Britain? You know, it is so rare that you go and see something where you have 7, 9, 10 Asian actors on stage, female. And it is so rare, I mean, for Housted at least, to have on occasion 70-80% Asian people in their audience, who should be there as rightfully as anybody else who should be there. And I just wonder sometimes whether there is a sort of tension around, you know, whose theatre is it anyway? Who is this for? You know, if the critics go to Hampstead Theatre and they, on a regular basis, and they feel, this is my theatre, it belongs to me, I know what this building is about, I always come here. If for one moment they feel that someone's laughing at something that they haven't understood every single word, is there a tension in that for them? Maybe there is. Maybe they feel, look, this is my place. This is, you know, this is for the likes of me. So why have I not understood every word? Why is somebody laughing and I haven't understood every word? And sure, it might only be an expletive or something. So I think this is a very, very, you know, it's a very complex conversation, and it's a very interesting moment.
I think there's a real sort of danger of, you know, cultural apartheid in the theatre, which one sees all the time. As I say, I go to the theatre quite a lot, and I'm very often the only non-white person, you know, sometimes in the minority, sometimes literally the only. And I, you know, I've seen things like History Boys, War Horse, I've loved them, but I've looked around at the makeup of the audience, you know, and I will see an entire scene in German or French and go, okay, fine, I didn't get that, you know, well, I've got O-level French. Everyone's laughing at these things that they all jointly understand. You know, 50% of what Alan Bennett's literary references are. Yeah, I absolutely love Alan Bennett. It actually makes me want to write a reading list and say, do you know what, I didn't get 50% of that, but I still loved it. But I'll go home and try and, you know, I read his Untold Stories, and I know that a lot of the literary references and things I'll never know until I read that poem that he's referring to. Well, similarly here, I mean, this play is sort of, you know, for people who know Mirza Ghalib, they might get those tiny little things when I talk about the donkey and the mangoes, and, you know, it's layered, and it's layered and layered, and I'm not saying that it's, no one has the right to criticise it, but I'm a bit confused at the disparity of discourse, because obviously the reviews we've had from the Asian viewers, and indeed from this, you know, one or two local people, one of whom has been to Pakistan, you know, and he absolutely says, you know, Pakistan is a complex country, you know, and this play might well confuse those not familiar with it, but for anyone with an interest in this part of the world, it is surely required viewing. This is by Josh Leib in a local paper, Islington Tribune. I mean, I can quote, there is a complete disparity of discourse is what I'm trying to say. And equally, you know, a couple of the Asian viewers, the Asian critics will say this is, you know, such an important play because it is not some kind of worthy piece, which some of the people have called it. You know, if it's actually directly relevant to perspectives today, you know, it is the context, the mission and purpose of articulating those it is completely relevant to today. And sort of it makes me sort of wonder whether the cultural establishment has got a subtle enough palate to distinguish the taste. And maybe they'll only accept a kind of bland mainstream. And we don't fit that, you know, and some of our work has fitted that and has the great tick next to it. So
I suppose as a theatre company, you know, yourselves, you're constantly evolving. As we said, this year marks your 21st year and you've opted to do a classic, which you have done in the past as well. But this is like a serious dramatic piece as opposed to, say, a comedy like East is East, for which you became really well known within the quote-unquote mainstream theatre framework. I mean, do you always feel that almost that you're going back to the beginning, as it were, with this?
I think, you know, there were challenges 21 years ago and there are still challenges. And I think, you know, of late, you know, there is a conversation going around, is there not, that we're all integrated, and we can all pat ourselves on the back and feel that, you know, we're beautifully integrated, and in fact, separate nurture for separate communities, separate incubations are no longer necessary. Well, certainly in my opinion, nothing could be further from the truth. And, you know, you wonder whether subconsciously people are trying to speak to that feeling that, you know, we are all beautifully integrated and there's no more work to do. And so, you know, the challenge that we face as a theatre company doing very culturally specific work, which we feel is universal, you know, is very much alive.
I think people still, I mean, we are still very much, and, you know, we are part of what is the London hub, you know, which is a hub of artists that are there to show the vibrancy of the cultures in this city and you know, Britain in general, that we recognise that the mainstream would be a very bland place if it wasn't for us. You know, the Roy Williams, Ayub Khan Deans, you know, people who have had their debut. You know, it is still the place which is the first port of call. So I think, you know, the kind of artists we're developing, the voices, apart from Christine and myself, who are the founder members and are still, you know, artistically led and at the heart of the company, a lot of the work that we commission, I mean, I do worry for what would happen if...
Earlier this year, you showcased a series of new plays under the initiative Propeller. We've got like four writers and four scripts.
Those are the plays that we currently have under commission. And, you know, we're looking for a home for them once they are fully done, which they should be by the end of this year. And I do think, you know, that sort of work is not being done in earnest, you know. And I shouldn't use the word earnest because it's like a cousin to worthy. But, you know, that sort of work is something that...
Well, in a dedicated way. Being done in a dedicated way, so that a volume of scripts, a volume of directors, a volume of designers is coming out from, you know, diverse
maybe,
backgrounds.
Maybe the odd one that
there's
emerges
the
from
one.
The Royal Court.
There's
or
the odd one that emerges.
Like that, or the national.
But you know, you have to put your weight behind this to develop a significant volume of people, a pool of people who are working, because you know, you can't be an artist unless you can present your work somewhere. And you know, as a young artist, you know, you have to have those opportunities. We were lucky enough, we did have those opportunities. But I mean, Sudha is absolutely right. I mean, I think you know, if it wasn't for companies like us who are doing this 24/7, who are absolutely dedicated to it, there would be so many people who are just not getting those very early opportunities that they need to develop their craft. It's not to, you know, make networks and then sort of filter off into the mainstream. It's to develop their craft, their work. And
I think this sort of whole discussion about dialects and voices and accents is all very relevant because, you know, a lot of these people are developing and writing in a patois. You know, I would encourage, you know, we did Sweet Cider by MJS Hussain, and it's about the Mirpuri Pakistani community, and you know, we encourage her to use the Mirpuri in a
or even somebody like Satinder Chauhan
is writing about the Punjabi women in Southall, and you know, Ishi Din is writing a play about four young Muslim friends, and they use this kind of patois, which they go in and out, you know, they go, oh, see you down the Kabristan. And, you know, fine, you might hear that and go, oh God, what was that? But maybe three lines later you'll understand that Kabristan means cemetery. And, you know, we could say to them, oh, look, we had these terrible reviews, why don't you just water it down to a sort of English,
use the English word,
you know, that
for
everyone
it
understands. And I don't think that is actually curbing people's creative choices.
And these people are British.
You know, and these creative choices are being made in the mainstream and being accepted. So I think
I mean, it's interesting. We did Lyrical MC, which was with a group of young people in Southwark, and using absolutely all their patois, all their languages. And funnily enough, even in that, we had some critics saying, this is very unfamiliar to me, I can't judge this, the criteria that I normally judge theatre with, this is not presenting me with that. You know, it's got too many languages, too much patois that I don't understand. And Jatinder Varma said something very interesting. He said, look, to deny these voices is to deny emergent English. And, you know, that's significant. That is very, very significant.
I guess that's a very cogent point, because you may accept some of that in literature, in the writing, yeah. as it were, in books, in novels, but perhaps it's a new thing in theatre, so...
I think it is. I mean, I would have to say that I've perhaps hadn't quite accounted for, if you're talking specifically about the House of Bilky's Bibi, the sort of Hampstead literary audience who might come because they know Lorca, sitting cheek by jowl with our Asian audiences. You know, it is quite a mix, that there's probably quite a distance between, you know, it's not a natural mix to anything else that they might go and see, you know.
Yeah.
So I think we are experiencing the sort of results of that, and I'm intrigued by that, you know, because sometimes I do see, especially when, and it all depends on the tip, you know, on a night where there's a mostly Asian audience, I do sometimes see the kind of a couple of people looking at the programme, trying to figure out which sister is which sister. And that's because they're sitting there thinking about their Lorca. You know, they're not allowing themselves to just go with what they're seeing. And because they've seen the face on the poster, and they assume that person must be the youngest daughter. And actually, we made the poster before we cast the entire show.
Although that person is in the show.
She's in the show, but she's the middle daughter, you know. And I saw this rather bemused couple, and I had to put them out of their misery by saying, you know, please... don't worry about the poster, you know, just
watch the
it.
Play.
It is
and
the
listen.
Lorca that you know.
Great.
Yeah.
So that's all we can say as well. Watch the play. The play's on at Hampstead Theatre, and then it goes on a national tour to Belgrade, Coventry, Harrogate.
It is a co-production with Harrogate Theatre, which
and,
we're delighted.
And it ends in Oldham.
Yeah.
Christine and Sudha, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice.
Thank you.